We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Here we go on a Thursday. It's Cody and Gold, presented by Crossroads Investment Lending, the fix and flip guys at kclend.com. Well, the Sunflower Showdown, not something we planned on talking about, quite honestly, much, if at all, today. And then all of a sudden, it turns into the Sunflower Throwdown, and we're leading the show with it, just like that.
Things change quickly when there are fist fights on the court, spilling into sections with fans that have people picking up stools. I know people were taking some particular issue with the word use of chair.
People did not like me on Twitter last night saying DeSosa picked up a chair. I'm sorry, it was a stool. Okay. Because that changes everything, clearly. The difference.
The back, it's different. Different weight. Obviously, the severity depends on, simply based on that. No, it was, honestly, it's the kind of game that maybe we talk about for a couple of minutes, specifically because it's a Super Bowl week. Off week, obviously, but the Chiefs leading into the Super Bowl continues to be the main topic of conversation, and plenty more of that in today's show. But when there are fistfights against the two local teams, yeah, that's something and worth discussing. And it's just kind of funny when you go back to exactly what went down in this game. I'm still trying to figure out how it happened.
And that'll do it, this version. And a block to finish. DeSosa blocks it, and now the bench is empty. Just unnecessary.
Yep. That's not good.
This is a punt call. This is bad. No good. Oh, this is terrible.
There are going to be ramifications for this going forward.
And it's just no point to it. Yeah, that is not acceptable.
I would get my team to the locker room right now.
So that was on ESPN last night, Fran Fraschilla. They're part of the call. If you hadn't heard it before, there you go. That's what it was on ESPN yesterday. And so essentially what happened, Kansas is up 22 points, and DeJuan Gordon steals the ball. Kansas is just trying to dribble out the clock, right? We see that over and over in basketball games all the time. Just get the game over with. Gordon steals the ball. He dribbles the other way for a layup. DeSosa, who had the ball stripped from him, obviously was upset about being it stripped. So he goes and has a hard block, clean block, but it was a hard block at the end of the game. Then he stands over the K-State player, and that's where everything opened up. He stands over. Some players leave the K-State bench area. There's some pushing, some shoving. Sosa throws a punch or two. Punches, I think, also went the other way. Sosa grabs a stool. Fortunately, Jarence Howard, K-State assistant,
looked like he got
the stool out of his hand. I know some people are saying, well, did he drop it on his own? Either way, fortunately, the stool gets out of his hand, and you had everybody trying to figure out what on earth just happened. And I do think at some point today during the show, maybe we'll learn what some of the punishments should be. But everybody's trying to say, all right, whose fault was it? Who started it and all this? And I look at it, for me initially, I don't have a problem with DeJuan Gordon stealing the basketball. I know some people say, oh, that's Bush League. You don't do that. The game's almost over. I really don't have a problem with that. You're still playing the game. And that's why you answer it if you're DeSosa on the other end. You get the block. Like, to me, that evened it out. You don't like the steal? All right, I'm going to go block your shot. He did. It was a great block to end the game. And then be done with it. When you stand over somebody, if anybody that's watched sports or played sports, if you stand over somebody, most of the time, at minimum, the opposing team, maybe not leave the bench, but the opposing team is going to shove you. Or at least get in your face for that. And usually it ends there. Unfortunately, it didn't, and now we're talking about a brawl that occurred. But that blame on each side, it's not just on Kansas, it's not just on Kansas State, but I don't have as big of an issue with the stealing of the basketball at the end like some, and I'm a Kansas grad, you guys know that. Like, a lot of Kansas fans are upset about that. I had no problem with Gordon stealing the basketball at the end.
New quote from head coach Bill Self on the matter. I've had a chance to review, as we all have here. University has, everyone has, all angles you could possibly have. There will be consequences. It's only 10 a.m., and we're still in the process of communicating with the league office officials. So we probably will have more information on what happens during the show about what takes place there. But honestly, who cares? Like, that part of it, like, okay, yeah, fine, steal the ball. Neat. Don't care. All right, blocked a shot. Cool, neat, big deal. Even for part of me standing over, it is obviously inciting part of that. And then the little shove. The end issue is what takes place all after that. All the things before there, for me, are a part of sport. People talk trash. People stand over each other. Allen Iverson walks over Tyronn Lue. And that didn't lead to a fight. All of those things happen in the normal course of sport. People make fun of each other. People give you a hard time. People talk trash. People have stolen balls before. And yes, Kansas players have been attacked for, like, dunking at the end. Or vice versa. Like, Kansas fans had an issue with someone dunking at the end. I mean, if you've got an issue with someone dunking at the end, Silvio De Sousa's block is equally offensive because the game is definitively over. So just let him dunk it and no one cares. If he steals it, do you have a right to dunk, to block it? Hell yeah, you do. He stole it. He's going to go down and play to the final whistle, which we teach people at a young age to do. Okay. He's going to go down and block, play to the final second. Okay. No problem. The issue is what happens in between. And all that stuff that goes down at the end of that game when people are clearly trying to stomp on players and punches are being thrown, and then De Sousa picks up a stool to try to swing it at somebody.
And that's the image right there.
That's the only problem I have with any of this. And even so, it's still just a fight. I'm not, like, my immediate reaction was like, boy, Sosa's gone for a long time. And I still don't necessarily think that he's not going to get punished pretty harshly, because I still think there's a pretty good chance that there's going to be a major punishment coming down on the De Sousa end. I'm just not so sure it needs to be for the season or the rest of the year. But for a guy who couldn't get on the field before, you got to know better than to pick up a stool. The one thing we've learned in all of these instances, don't pick up a weapon. You're in trouble if you just throw fists. But I don't know, Gold, you strike me as the kind of person who probably has never been in a fight.
What makes you say that, huh? What makes you say that, Cody?
I'm going to assume.
Huh? By the way, Cody,
it's not a personal
by the way,
attack.
Cody would be correct.
Yeah. I assume you've never been in a fist fight. I didn't mean to just assume that on you, but it just felt
it's,
like maybe
it's
that
accurate.
Was,
it would be accurate to say.
I would have said the same thing. I would assume Serta has been in a fight. So as much as I assume you had never been in a fight, and I was correct, I would also assume Serta at some point in his life has been in a fist fight.
Oh, I've been in plenty of fights. I've been in a melee that was similar to the one that happened last night. A couple of them, actually.
Similar?
I've broken my hand, dislocated a finger, got hit in the face with a rock one time.
Yeah, no weapons, right? That's the one problem in all of this. Just fight. Just
well, that's the other thing. The image that everybody has, and you've all seen it circulate through social media, it's on any national publication this morning, the image is of Sousa holding the stool over his head. And we all know, fortunately, he did not use it as a weapon. But that's the image for those that also didn't read it and watch it live or read in the details. You see that and you're like, oh, this kid, immediate reaction for people is he's got to be banned from Kansas or whatever it may be. Like, Dick Vitale went nuts last night, and you shouldn't be surprised by that. But Dick Vitale yesterday, essentially, I mean, this was right after the game. Hear what he had to say about the future of De Sousa at Kansas.
Well, just absolutely sickening, unbelievable. In 40 years on my TV, I haven't seen anything like that unless you go to the NBA and you look at the Pistons brawl that took place at the Palace. I think there's no doubt in my mind that De Sousa never, ever should put a uniform on again in college basketball. None. As Seth said, and I couldn't agree more, he's holding a chair. I mean, that's criminal. He's going to hurt somebody.
That's criminal. That's
obviously he should be punished. The problem is that it spills into people.
I'm not saying he shouldn't be punished. I think we're talking at least five or more games minimum. There's, I think, 11 or 12 games left in the Big 12 conference regular season. I wouldn't be stunned if it's something long-term in that range for the rest of the regular season. I don't think it should be that. But there's a reason, Cody, as well, he was on the floor with 2 minutes to go, and they're up by 22 points, because this is someone, he hasn't had a huge role on this team this year. And this is a program that has put their neck out for him, and it's a part of the reason they're involved in all
these
allegations right now.
Which is why he should not be getting in fist fights.
And that's why I think there is more of a possibility of the punishment, the suspension that is coming for him and others, but certainly him, why it's going to be potentially longer than people think it should be. People are trying to compare you know, Marcus Smart shoving a fan and saying he only got, I think it was three games or something for like that, something for that. Yeah, no fans, fortunately, were shoved in this. There was the danger, though, of fans being injured. I mean, anybody that's been to Allen Fieldhouse, whether you've been there, you watch it on TV, but certainly you've been to Fieldhouse before. I've been there plenty of times. And that area behind the basket is a vulnerable area. There's not only media members right there, but more importantly, it's the handicap section. Right? And that potentially could have been disastrous. That could have been disastrous.
He's like, fights happen. Take it to the court. Stop bringing it to the people. That's where the punishments will come stronger here. If you just throw a fist at a player on the court, most people are pretty understanding of that. It's how badly you let it spill. And honestly, credit to the staff there. Like the security staff, they seem like they got to bust it up pretty quick.
Like, not a bad
job. I know, but they did a pretty good job dispersing of it pretty quick. They deserve some credit in all of this because, again, we know that Howard might have saved DeSosa from swing because it didn't look like he was picking up that stool to tame a lion or to just chill with it like he was trying to get out of the way of somebody. It certainly looked like he was going weapon of choice, and then Howard was like, no.
Well, Howard pins DeSosa up against the wall there to prevent for anything from escalating any further than that. I did think both coaching staffs, as you said, with just their handling, not only the security, but both coaching staffs. I mean, I don't know who it was. Someone jumped and flew. I still don't know which assistant coach that was. Someone, if it was Jeremy Case or whoever, like somebody dove in there. They were wearing their suit and dove across. Like the coaches on both ends, I thought, did the best they possibly could when Bruce Weber and Bill Self were both shaking hands at midcourt and they look over and all of a sudden you see there's a melee going on. In fact, this is what Bruce Weber had to say after the game.
I told them to back off. I don't, you know, but he's a competitive guy. I don't want to take that fire out of his belly, but he also got to be smart. And, you know, all we talk about is act right, treat people right, play the right way. And that's been our way at K-State. That came probably, I don't know if Coach Snyder said it, but that's how he brought his guys along. That's what makes K-State special. And, you know, it probably shouldn't have happened. So, life lessons. That's what we talked to them about in the locker room. And good fortune, no one got hurt. And hopefully no major situation from it.
But usually, that's the weird thing about sports punishments. Sometimes it often is about if somebody gets hurt or not. And, like, the place, it's like, no one got hurt, so who? But for me, it's actions, like, intent. That thing spilled over. So, and obviously, there's going to be multiple penalties across the entire thing, and there should be. I don't think it's, like, the end-all, be-all. I don't know that. Upon reflection, I do understand that fights happen in sports. When they carry over into people, it becomes a more serious offense. Because you have a choice of where the fight takes place. I know it escalated quickly. He got shoved into, but you shouldn't really be defending people on either side of this. I see Kansas fans who are like, well, he shouldn't have stolen the ball. Who cares? And then K-State fans are like, well, maybe Silvio probably shouldn't have actually thrown the first fist, right? All of those things are accurate. And really, to me, the person who throws the first fist, like the first actual physical altercation, is where these things become.
Yeah, then
because standing over him is not the offense. It's when you start, and shoving is different. When you start throwing fists, that's when a fight takes a different level, and those are the first people who typically get blamed in these situations, and probably should. Don't have a problem with steal, don't have a problem with the block, don't have a problem even with, like, it's immature, and DeSosa shouldn't stand over him, but that's to say that's the first time we've seen that happen.
Right, that's why it would have been a technical foul, and everybody moves on. You see that happen. We'll see that happen multiple times throughout the college basketball and NBA season, where someone stands over someone. We've seen that time and time. You see it in the NFL. You see it in all sports. You see it in the NFL at times as well, and a taunting penalty may or may not be called at the time. I thought there were multiple escalation points. Certainly, yes, when punches are thrown, that takes it up a notch. But I thought there were multiple escalation points. Again, I really don't have a problem with the steal. I just don't have an issue with that because, to me, then it was answered immediately by DeSosa with the block. And then it's over. But then he chose to stand over a Kansas State player.
Like, he could have just blocked and walked away.
The minute you had K-State players leave the bench, that was another escalation point. Then it appears that DeSosa gets shoved and falls backwards, and that's when he started. It looked like there were three K-State players around him, and that's when he decided to throw a punch. So, no, they're on both sides. Nobody is completely scotch-free here when it comes to...
No, they're both guilty. DeSosa, to me, seemed like the instigator.
Well, and he's going to get the most serious punishment, as he should.
Well, he had a stool.
He's clearly going to get that. No, I also think, what's the James Love kid who is he hurt? He's a redshirt, something. He was in street clothes from Kansas State. That's who was right there in DeSosa's face. I don't know what's going to necessarily happen with him because let's say he's hurt. How do you handle suspensions for that? You're not going to suspend a guy who is hurt And all these guys that left the bench, technically,
if NCAA
the Big 12
and NBA have a history of doing that before.
If the Big
suspending 12, hurt guys in like what seems to be false.
But if you're the Big 12, I mean, the next game for each of these teams this weekend is the Big 12 SEC Challenge. So are you going to suspend them for a non-league game? And then the guys that left the bench, if you suspend everybody that left the bench, you don't have enough guys to play. So you're going to have to stagger some of these suspensions as well. So there's some complicated processes, I think, that the guys on the NFL, or excuse me, on the Big 12 office are going to have to go through. And we almost did have an NFL situation. Miles Garrett reminded me right away. I was thinking, oh, this was reminded me of the Miles Garrett situation where he used the helmet against Mason Rudolph. Like, that's where we were headed, potentially, if that stool was used.
Like, I'm always confused by someone like of DeSosa size going to the stool. It must just be a gut reaction. Like, I went to his, I picked up a chair once in a fight with my brother because he was always bigger than me, and I was sick of losing a fight or whatever it was. And he was like, you can't hit me with a chair. I'm like, look, I will do anything in this moment to win this fight. Like, I'm not trying to lose here anymore. So I've been in that situation. I understand kind of the reality that comes with it. I don't understand. Like, I don't think you should be. I think you should obviously be critical. I don't think I'm like, you know, of what took place and all the people. Because obviously when you hear Self and you hear Weber and you hear the people who were in those instances in charge of those teams were pretty critical of themselves and should be. I just think that, like, punishment wise, it becomes a difficult thing. Because if I'm going to tell you, obviously, DeSosa should be punished. Love should be punished. There should be games missed for players on both sides of this thing. But how much? I kind of trust the judgment of a league that I wouldn't typically trust the judgment of, because it's hard to say, oh, should he miss the rest of the 11 conference games? I don't know if I'm there.
I wonder if there's something where we see from both K-State and Kansas, where Bill Self potentially announces his own suspension, if you will, for guys, and then you see the league as well tack on a game or two. Could it be a combination of that? Yeah. What's your gut tell you then? How many? And it's tough to say what's justified or not because this is unique. But what's your gut tell you ultimately for? And there's multiple guys that'll be suspension, but for DeSosa, for example, or for the James Love kid, how do you think that goes down? I'll put it at 5 to 7 games for DeSosa, and I understand the precedent before people bring up, as I said, with Marcus Smart, who shoved a fan. To me, this is different because this not only spilled into the section with handicap seating, just because he didn't use the stool, I think doesn't all of a sudden say, oh, well, it's not as bad. Yes, he didn't make contact with the fan, but there was potential for, you saw fans on the ground. And by the way, that photo, I think
in the handicap section, that's not a good place to be having fights.
I think you'll see a message sent by the league. I think this will be easily north of 5 games for him. And then I think you'll see a couple players suspended a game and a few maybe suspended 3. And hopefully both sides can move on from this going forward.
They're already annoyed by DeSosa. I think it's going to be double digits, which seems strong. It maybe seems stronger than any punishment that they've gotten before. But I do think anytime it gets this big, this kind of attention, that physical, and spills over to the fans, that's when they stop messing around with how long they punish. And maybe that's a little too strong. But the truth is, anytime you get yourself into that situation, it's just a fight. I don't think it's like February 29th when these two teams take on each other again. And you'll be able to hear right here on 610 Sports Radio. So leap year day, right? I don't think when it spills over into that moment and those two teams play, I don't think there's going to be another fight. I don't think there's going to be another issue.
Not another fight, but
during that time, there'll be some talk, sure. And there should be some talk kind of going into that game. But in the end, I do think there's a point of like, okay, people fight occasionally. They probably shouldn't. Sometimes it gets the better of them, but people do still fight occasionally. It is in human nature that this occurs. So I do understand that aspect of it too. So I don't want to overblow what took place just based on the fact it was a fight, but it's just like the whole spillover. And the fact that every little thing seemingly at the end of the game built up that quickly just stunned me.
That was weird, too, because it wasn't an emotional, high-intensity game. I mean, this thing was out of reach pretty early in the first half. Kansas was up 39-23 at halftime, and they end up winning this thing 81-60.
Ron's got to be pissed. Best game of his career.
The local kid was fantastic. 20 points on the night, and nobody cares about that.
He played good.
Let's be real. We wouldn't be talking about this game if this melee didn't happen.
No, I mean, not for long.
Maybe 2 minutes.
We wouldn't be
leading the show with it. I can promise you that. So we'll see if any of the punishments get handed down while we are on the air. Reminder, in about 10 minutes, your chance at $1,000 in our national cash contest. Cody will have your keyword for that. There was also some baseball news right before we hopped on the air. Alex Gordon, we were wondering if this could go down before Fan Fest gets going on Friday and Saturday out at Bartle Hall, which, by the way, will have a 4-pack to Saturday's Royals Fan Fest still to give away today on Cody and Gold. But Alex Gordon signing a 1-year deal worth reportedly $4 million with the Royals. And Flanny, Jeffrey Flanagan, reporting also, I think this is the more interesting part of it even, is that Alex Gordon waived his 10-5 clause, so he could be traded. And if he would be, he would be getting a $500,000 assignment bonus if that happens. So heading into FanFest, Alex Gordon back with the Royals.
That's stunning. The deal's fine. Like, you shouldn't have any real problem. I know people are saying, hey, you're a rebuilding year. Why sign back a vet? One, not just any vet. That's a statue vet. That's a guy who's going to have something out in the outfield with George Brett and Frank White. So that should be a consideration. Not that you should just sign players who are fan favorites just to keep them around. But on the surface, a one-year, $4 million deal for a gold glove winning, even last year, right? He won the gold glove again. A guy who hit .266 with a .360 on base percentage and 17 home runs and 76 RBIs. That's a good deal. That's a perfectly fine deal. My only issue with the deal in general is that it comes in coordination with other deals like Mikel Franco, and then I still don't understand who exactly they're trying to put on the field at the same time. Because it seemed like they're trying to move Dozier to the outfield and put Franco in third, but Franco doesn't rank as a better defensive third baseman than Dozier. They rank pretty similarly. And that put Witt in center field, which again is putting him out of his natural position, which I don't love. Unless they're planning on sending Nicky Lopez back to AAA for a little bit, which they could do.
And that's what we don't know. We don't know.
But then that puts Phillips in center, and that might open up the outfield a little bit too. To me, it just seems like kind of a discombobulated plan of maybe not getting enough young players in again. And I know you can't just stuff a roster full of 24-year-old players. That's a bad plan too. But Mikel Franco feels a lot like the Chris Owings deal in the sense that Franco had 17 home runs last year, so he still got some pop. And Owings never really showed much of that in his career. He was just a better defender, a better defensive player who was versatile. But three-year deal, like $3 million deals like Franco get in the way of other players in the infield like Dozier. Gordon doesn't necessarily block people nearly as much to me on that end. I just feel like you kind of get yourself in a situation where maybe you're just kind of crowding things with players that are 27 and older and you're not sure what the future is. But Gordon itself, the deal's fine.
Oh, what, one-year, $4 million. Good. Absolutely. Good deal. The guy had it, even though it had been a rough couple years, last year was his best offensive season since 2015 and won another gold glove. I mean, there's no doubt about where he fits in on the team. But you're right. You wonder. I wonder more bigger picture, bigger plan potentially. And we've talked all offseason, you know, about Whit Merrifield and potentially what the future holds for him. And we've heard from Dayton Moore time and time again talking about, you know, plenty of teams are obviously interested. He's perhaps maybe the most valuable asset of any team in baseball right now, given the contract and everything.
His of course, age and Hunter Dozier should be viewed in a similar light, not because of his defensive abilities, because that hurts him. But if you put his offensive numbers together, he's likely to sign an extension at the same range that they just gave Witt. So 4 years of control at $16 million.
So you wonder, bigger picture there in future, let's say something at some point in time, whether it's Dozier or Whit Merrifield, and you're talking about trades and things like that, then this makes a little bit more sense in terms of not being quite
probably
as crowded. Now, you still have to move some guys around. But overall, I don't think we've been expecting that. We've been talking about this off air, like expecting this Alex Gordon news was going to come at some point this week. That's what all the reports kind of suggested, that we would be at this point. We wondered if it would be today. Most people thought it would be right before FanFest, and it's a great opportunity for them to have this going right into Friday and Saturday.
And he'll be there. From the reports, he'll be speaking on Friday. So all that's good
as far
for kids.
As
it's not a bad deal. It's just, it feels like they're getting crowded with these types of deals. And Dayton hasn't had a perfect track record of these last couple of years. Gordon doesn't land in that same category. I think it more affects what they do with Franco and how they operate with Dozier. And it doesn't seem like they're taking Starling or Phillips all that serious in this account, too, if they keep bringing in other faces. Other than that, the Gordon part of it makes perfect sense.
Coming up next, a chance at $1,000 in our national cash contest and reliving some of those moments from Sunday's win to punch the Chiefs ticket to the Super Bowl, including a fun moment with Jim Nantz.
Cody and Gold, brought to you by Crossroads Investment Lending, the fix and flip guys at caseylend.com.
Back here on Cody and Gold, presented by Crossroads Investment Lending, the fix and flip guys at caseylend.com. Time for our national cash contest, chance at $1,000.
1,000 on the 30s. Text the code word DATE to 72881. That's DATE, D-A-T-E. You can be a $1,000 cash winner in the national cash contest. 610 Sports Radio, the only sports radio station giving you a chance. $8,000, just listen here each weekday. On the 30s, 8:30 to 4:30, we'll have another chance coming up at 11:30. Just text DATE, as in we need to get Alex a date for Valentine's Day, to 72881. That's D-A-T-E. You're new in town. You're still single, so that is true. You do need a Valentine's Day date. I'd like you to get a date
to set this up.
I'd like you to get a date that Cert and I are allowed to come on with. Like,
well, that ruins
like a group date.
That ruins.
No. This is show purpose.
You guys can be a couple tables over. Is that what you're saying?
No, I want us to sit four people at a table.
Then it's not even a date at that point.
It is a date. Because Cert and I are not dating
at the table.
It's kind of a double date, a little. Cert and I get to know each other a little bit better. We've only been doing this show 3 weeks. You get to know your date better. And we get to ask her questions so we can help you vet. It's vetting. We're helping.
I mean, down the road, we can do something on this show.
Is there
live.
Any girl that would agree to that?
I feel like that's super awkward for everybody.
Why is it awkward for us? We don't care.
Not as awkward for you guys. Way awkward for me. And
certainly
whoever
awkward for you. It is in no way awkward for me, which is great.
And what if while we're talking, the girl decides that she likes me more, and then we just get into this whole messy situation?
All right, so a five-person date. You can each have your own date, and I'm just there.
We can have people start submitting. Cody's just going to be there videotaping. I feel like that's probably what Cody's going to be doing.
No, I've just got questions. Honestly, you should go on a date and then allow her to come on the air the next day and us talk about it.
That doesn't seem like that's going to last. If right away, if you go on the date and explain,
no,
you know,
you're
by
wrong.
The way, I'm on the radio, and why don't you come on the show the next day? That's going to.
How dare you suggest that wouldn't work? Vern met his wife on this station.
I do know that.
Yeah, but I've had multiple relationships fail because I openly talked about stuff that was going on the radio and they did not like it.
Yes, but I'm saying that this is a good relationship barometer.
Right away.
Because if she can handle us talking about it on the air, that's a pretty good sign that it's going to work out. Versus a date you went on where a girl said it was weird that you sounded like
you were
on the radio.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Not the last date, but the previous second to last date I went on, talking, and I didn't even talk that I was on the radio, but the fact that she knew I was on the radio was a major problem for the date. Now, she was also a little crazy, but she was obsessed with the voice and saying that's all she could think about, and therefore she couldn't continue. Like, the date ended, essentially, about an hour in because she...
She's not the one for you.
So what I'm saying, the radio route doesn't... Not on the first date. Like, that can be a complete disaster.
Nah, but I think it just...
All right, in the summertime, when things...
What it actually is a sorter. It's a date sort. Not going to work out. Moving on. Dating is all... The end game of dating eventually is to actually end up with someone. I'm not saying it's always the end game of every date.
Is that how that's supposed to work? Is that how it's supposed to work?
That's the end game.
Oh, okay.
Eventually
that's
a date.
That's been the problem.
You win.
Huh,
you win by eventually ending up that way. Now, during the meantime, I'm not saying there's other ends for a date that aren't nice that don't end up in marriage. I'm not saying that that doesn't go that way. I'm just saying that I don't think that going on the radio with us to discuss it would be all that bad.
I'm not entirely against this. We got to talk to...
We can't do dating game. That's what I'm just saying. Like, just let me come on your date. just let Cert and I come on
post
your date.
Post-Super Bowl, when things quiet down a little bit, I don't think it's going to come together by the time we get to Valentine's Day. We're going to be back for like a week at that point in time from Miami. We're still going to be celebrating the Super Bowl. Who knows? Maybe we'll meet someone in Miami that's Chiefs fan. And Cody can set it all up for us.
We can go one step further, and you can just allow me access to whatever dating app you use to choose the girl before. I know that this is a mutual thing, but let me, you know, pick between a few.
All right, we'll figure this out. We'll incorporate it some form or fashion once we get out of the Super Bowl run here for Kansas City. No doubt about that. I'm not against it. Not against it whatsoever. Cerda can be involved in it. Cerda, you're not currently in
the relationship. There's no way Cerda's going to agree to this.
None? Okay.
Oh, maybe. Wait.
Hesitation.
No,
he hesitated. He hesitated for just a little bit.
Made me think there was a chance.
I will bring some things to the air. You guys don't need to be involved in the date. I'll handle that part.
Okay.
Travis Kelce was on a dating show once, right?
Yes. I did a post-game show for it.
Yep. You had a post-game show for the Travis Kelce dating show?
Correct.
How was that?
Great. I still got several numbers of previous contestants for some advice.
Real quick, I don't want to spend too much. You gave me crap for watching The Bachelor. You did a post-game show for a dating show.
Well, but it is related to the Chiefs.
Tie-in.
In my defense,
the Chiefs tie-in.
Travis Kelce.
I don't watch any of those
shows. Aaron Murray's been on the
bat.
Former Chief Aaron
show.
Murray's been on there.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah. You had to watch that show. It was content.
Show
Bachelor's content.
I'd fast forward through a lot of it. I'd skip to the good stuff.
Yeah, that's fair. I still think he chose the wrong girl, which is obvious evidence is they are not together.
By the way, Travis Kelce had one of the better moments, of course, after the win on Sunday in the AFC title game.
I'll tell you what. It's been 7 years coming, baby. I learned one thing since I've been here. You gotta fight for your right to party!
So there's more background to this. We all know Jim Nance was conducting the interview. And anytime you see these post-game interviews, the biggest rule there is that you don't let go of the mic. Right? You're always taught you hold on to the mic. Do not let the player, coach, whoever grab the microphone from you. Like that's the producer's That is rule number one. And so Jim Nance, I guess, was on a national radio show yesterday.
He was on the Dan Patrick show.
He was on the Dan Patrick show and gave a story of what he was thinking as what you just heard Kelsey say was going on.
You're trying to ask enough questions to satisfy everybody and then throw it back to the studio. I said that it's always been the toughest thing I've had to learn is to be able to talk to somebody and remember what you're saying and what they're saying, but also somebody is talking to you in your ear while you're doing that. Can you give the audience an idea of what that was like in Kansas City with Travis Kelce and company?
Well, Dan, you have to fight for the right to play the NBA.
And you almost missed out on that because you were saying, oh, we got to go back to the studio, and you just put that microphone in front of Kelce, and you, as we all know, never give up the microphone in a situation like that.
You cannot do that, but I have to tell you, I was insubordinate there because they were, you mentioned there were voices in your ear. I had Jim Rickoff, who I dearly love, and I'm sure he had people behind him that were screaming to get off the air, and Jim kept saying, as I was talking to Patrick Mahomes, this is it, this is it. Now, I'm looking past Pat, and I see Tyron standing there, Tyron Matthew, and I see Travis. Travis already tipped me off that he wanted to say something. Now, what am I going to do? They've just won the AFC Championship. I'm going to blow these guys off? So, I mean, I wasn't exactly sure what the rush was, and I'm really good at following instructions. But on this one occasion, I think I said something about I've got to get it back to the studio.
Yeah.
But, hey, guys, congratulations. And Tyron just said thank you. And then, of course, Travis just went off, and it made the whole thing great.
It's that part of it. I really love that moment anyway, but the fact that Jim Nance is like, all right, I guess, and then here's the microphone and let's pray. Like, I thought he might say something he wasn't supposed to say, which wouldn't be uncommon. He had already interrupted Tracy Wolfson on the sideline and told Patrick Mahomes that he effing loved him. So it wouldn't have been out of character necessarily for that moment to occur, but still somehow that like background of like Nance and everything coming in just added a little color to that for me.
It did. And think about that was for AFC Championship game. First time to a Super Bowl in 50 years. If they go on to win the Super Bowl, now it'll be on Fox. So it will not be Nance. It'll be Buck, I'm assuming, Aaron Andrews conducting the interview. Who knows what Travis Kelce potentially could pull out off in that interview this go around. If he was able to do that at Arrowhead this time at Miami, could you imagine what he's going to say?
I assume it will be an equal amount of excitement.
Equal?
Maybe surpass. Look, that was an awful lot of excitement. It's hard to go above.
Yeah, like, but it'd be after the Super Bowl, though.
No, I know. And I'm sure that he would be one of the most fun guys to be around the parade around about that time. No, I imagine it would probably take it up 7 or 8 notches based on that. Just because of what we know Travis Kelce to be like and what that moment would be like going into that. Which is why, obviously, we're all very hopeful that Kansas City will win. Because I'd rather have that conversation than any other narrative that might be coming through.
Narratives were already forming yesterday. We mentioned out of the Bay Area, there's been plenty of discussion about this Chiefs team as far as on-the-field narratives and how to slow them down and all that. But we all know the legacy narrative for Andy Reid, the legacy narrative even for Patrick Mahomes, for example. And what happens if Kansas City wins versus what happens if Kansas City loses? And Colin Cowherd discussed that on the show yesterday.
Andy Reid couldn't win the big game. What's going to happen now? We're paying Mahomes $44 million a year. You know, some of those veteran players we just can't afford anymore. Told you this wouldn't work. Andy doesn't develop running games. What are the headlines after this game? Narratives will start to cling to Andy and the Chiefs. There are no narratives here. There are no narratives. I mean, if Garoppolo loses to Patrick Mahomes, welcome to football for the next decade. Mahomes is going to beat virtually everybody. He's going to beat everybody. Even the great quarterbacks he's going to mostly beat. Even Travis Kelce, after the win, talked about the narratives that are on the Chiefs. I do think when you wait 2 weeks for a game, you can come in tight, and I do think the pressure is more on Kansas City, may not decide the game. But when people are asking, and I'm reading, and I'm hearing, you know, who's got a little feel where this is going to be a little tight. I think San Francisco can come in here with house money, play their butt off. They got three veteran guys. They paid their quarterback. Shanahan, Garoppolo are here forever. Young receivers are here forever. Kittle, if he can stay healthy, is here forever. The right tackle here forever. The young corner, Witherspoon, here forever. I think it's a different vibe leading up for San Francisco than I do Kansas City.
If you're choosing who has more or less pressure, clearly more pressure is on Kansas City. I'm not disagreeing with that. But the same thing could have been said about the Tennessee Titans going into Arrowhead as well. We were discussing that, how there's not nearly the amount of pressure on Tennessee as there was Kansas City. Yes, it's the Super Bowl. There's natural pressure that just comes with being in a big game, the biggest stage possible. But based off of what is on the line from career legacy-wise, I don't disagree with what he had to say about what will be discussed, because we've already said what we think will happen if Andy Reid doesn't win it and what would happen if Patrick Mahomes does win it versus Garoppolo loses the game. I agree with them there. Garoppolo loses. Okay, yeah, you lost to Patrick Mahomes. Shanahan may have some issues because it'll be his first Super Bowl as a head coach, but he had the Super Bowl as an OC with the Falcons 28-3 and fourth quarter game calling and all that. Like, if that comes up again in this Super Bowl, that potentially could be a narrative around Kyle Shanahan, but there's certainly more that would change if the Chiefs win or lose than if the Niners win or lose.
For me, I think, you know, Coward's a really good host, but it is obviously oversimplifying to just say that any team is going to be together forever. All we talk about is like how players are going to leave the Chiefs, right? Win or lose this season, every year, it is a turnover league. To just assume Witherspoon's going to be there forever, that's wrong. Players get too pricey. You let guys go. Veteran cuts happen. Their skill deteriorates. Sometimes at 27 or 28. Saying Jimmy Garoppolo is going to be there forever, he's almost 29. Like, on November 2nd of next year, he'll be 29. So in the middle of the season next year, he'll be 29 years old, which means what? Like, how many years left behind that? I know the young wide receivers, Deebo Samuels, they got some years on that contract, right? But Emmanuel Sanders isn't there forever. And I wouldn't call him a young wide receiver either.
All right, forever might be a strong word.
I know. I'm just saying that going into it, I think anytime you're in a Super Bowl, the same, like the pressure rate does change a little bit. And he's not wrong that it's more like if Jimmy Garoppolo loses, will people judge him for losing to Patrick Mahomes? No. No, they won't. But to just pretend like this Niners team is going to be together forever, they do obviously have a lot of really good young players. But I don't think their team is any more established to continue this for the next 4 years than the Chiefs are.
I don't
because
think that's what he was saying,
though. Because every major player of... I know, and I think he... Why? Why
I don't think that's what he was saying. He was explaining that he initially said that if the Chiefs win, the thought is going to be that, all right, Mahomes is going to beat everybody essentially forever. Like, Mahomes is as yes. long as he's going to beat everybody. And then he said on the flip side that if the Niners win or lose, they're still together. Nothing's changing. They're going to have Garoppolo. They're going to have these guys together. I don't think it was saying that Kansas City's...
necessarily that way?
I don't think he was even saying they were on a level playing field. I think it was more just about truly the narrative and thought process than anything else. Yeah, Garoppolo may not be there 10 years from now because he's going to be almost 40 years old for sure, whereas Mahomes will be 34. Clearly, you're right on that. But it's not as if in the next 2 to 3 years that Garoppolo's going to be gone, that Kittle's going to be gone, that Deebo Samuel's going to be gone. Like, why the most of those guys, Bosa as well, like, those guys are, it's, I feel very confident saying they're going to be there 3 years from now.
And if
that's the case, even though they're in an extremely tough division, probably the best division in football for the next couple of years, it appears, at least on the surface, considering what still is going to take place in Seattle. We talked about this with the Rams still going to be in the mix, and the Cardinals maybe going to be competitive over the next couple of years if things go well with Murray and Cliff Kingsbury. So I don't think it's as, oh, this is a situation like we saw with the Rams a year ago where they went to the Super Bowl and then they had a major fall off, and now we don't know if the Rams are going to be back to one of those top contenders in the NFC anytime soon. I think it appears to be a little more staying power with this Niners team given the coaching situation and some of the talent they have across the board.
What do you think the narratives will be? Hit us up, 69306 at the Smitty's Garage Burgers and Beer text line. Obviously, I think going into it, the Andy Reid one's going to play the largest. And I'm not surprised by what Cowherd had to say about it because I think we know that. And the narrative, I think, no matter what, even if Mahomes loses, I think people are still going to think that that's the team, like Cowherd said at the end there. The narrative becomes Andy, not Mahomes, because for the most part, we still kind of assume that he's going to beat most people. It was that stat by Adam Teicher from ESPN this morning in which Patrick Mahomes has won 50% of the games in which he's trailed by 10 or more over the last two seasons, while the rest of the league averages a 14% winning percentage over that time. And to go with that in the games in which they didn't win that they lost by 10. They scored 31 twice, 41, and 51. Like, there is legitimately no putting down this team in a game in which Patrick Mahomes is the quarterback. You just can't put him out of a game. So I think the conversation with him will still always be, he's going to beat a lot of great quarterbacks, a lot of great teams, just simply based on who he is.
And that's why winning the AFC title game was so huge for him personally, I think, because with the narratives, it by doing that, it ended any chance of people saying, oh, he can't win the big game. For now it did. Doesn't mean it won't crop up if he loses the Super Bowl and next year he loses another Super Bowl or something
like
that.
Well, because he would have lost two big games in 2 years.
For him to now, in 2 years, win one AFC title game and get to a Super Bowl, nobody can say he can't win big games, right? And certainly if they win the Super Bowl, you're never really going to be able to say that about him.
Not for a while. It has to take like 5 or 6 more years of losing big games.
And as we discussed yesterday about Mahomes and Reed and who deserves the credit and what's that percentage, what's that pie look like, if they lose on Sunday, I believe, or next Sunday, I said that, and I really believe this, and I think it's somewhat obvious, that Andy Reid, the percentage of who gets more credit will continue to sway in Mahomes' favor more than Reid's favor. Because people will say, oh, look, clearly Andy Reid's lost 2 Super Bowls. Mahomes is definitely not the problem. Andy Reid's the problem. Like, well, fair or not, that will be the national narrative. We know that.
Well, and he's already come out now, Andy has, and started talking about the way he's going to game plan for this week, which factors into the rest of the decision he's making too. Like, there's an article up at our friends at Arrowhead Pride, but you can see the quotes from Andy as well, talking about how he's going to handle this week. And a lot of what he's talked about is he's going to handle this like game plan. He's going to go to Miami and pretty much have his game plan against the Niners, not saying he won't make tweaks, because of all the distractions that come with being a week in Miami, which I'm sure we'll all get the feeling of here coming up in just a few days from now when we head out on Sunday, as all 3 shows, by the way, will be in Miami for Radio Row, all 6 main hosts, plus Ryan, plus BK, a bunch of guys will be down there. But when you look at like what he's going to set up this week, he'll have more questions if he doesn't get it right this time. Because now he's had the advantage of going through a Super Bowl once and understanding what, versus like, you know, we talk about Andy bye week. This isn't a bye week game plan. This isn't the same as getting to do a bye week game plan. I like that he's putting these things in place now because there are a lot of things you have to do those weeks. You have to live in a different city for an entire week. That's not how you do any other week. There is no comparing what you do this, you know, this upcoming week versus any other week. So if he's just going to treat this week like a normal week, we're going to practice at the same time, we're going to game plan together at the same time, we're going to have our meetings at the same time.
The media availability is the same this week for the most part.
Yes, that's the perfect way to do it. But if for some reason there's a way to question, and Shanahan's been through this too. He's not alone. You know, Reed's not alone. Shanahan was a coordinator, but he's been through this week and experienced it. So he's not inexperienced in what he's getting set up. But I think Andy's got a distinct advantage of having felt this once and knowing what this week brings, especially because by the time the last time he did it, the pageantry of the Super Bowl had built up. Now it's only gotten bigger since then, but it was still pretty big then, even last time he said it. It's not like if you were a coach in the 80s during the Super Bowl versus now. He understands all of the trappings that come with it.
And I mean, talk about being prepared and ready to roll. By his press conference he had Monday, right after the AFC title game, not only did he joke around about what he did after the game and ate the cheeseburger and everything like that, but he was already talking about, yeah, the sundown is at 5:55. The game's going to be right around 6:30, and it's been, the lows have been right around 60. Like, he had all of it ready to roll. I mean, they were good to go. Even with little things like that, from less than 24 hours after winning the AFC title game, he was already able to rattle all that stuff off. Like, they've been paying attention of how things are going to go as far, because he was asked about the weather. They've been playing in cold weather games recently, and now you're going to go to a warm weather city.
And he joked about getting ready for warm weather, yeah. So, I remember that.
Yeah, so I mean, I think that also goes just as far as, we can say it's normal prep with the game plan, but I think that even adds to it as well, just as far as how prepared, and not that, of course, the Niners are going to be prepared as well, but just how they're approaching this. And next week will be, this week probably doesn't feel weird at all for anybody. Next week is going to be the week when you're doing media stuff constantly. Same with the Niners, 4 separate times just with the general media that they're going to have to talk to down in the Radio Row, Media Convention Center, the team hotel, and all that stuff like that. And that's before they even have to deal with the specific stuff with Fox and the pre-packaged stuff and all the interviews and all the interview requests. And I mean, Mike Pinnell was on the drive yesterday, even great hour in studio with the guys. And he was asked even about the ticketing process, like little things like that you don't think about, but are all potential distractions. Now, I guess they only get 2 tickets. Can you believe that? They only get 2 tickets. That doesn't mean they won't buy more, but I guess they only get 2 tickets, the players do, for family.
Only give you so many, right? I mean, they can't just give you 2 million tickets to the game.
Your team's in the damn game.
Let's hear him explain it.
We only get two tickets, people. We have to pay for every other one. I want to make sure everyone heard that. We only get two free. You know, that's usually mom and dad. I think that's why they do it. And we have to pay for every other one.
Are you paying are face value?
No,
for those?
You get them on the super cheap, though, right?
Who gets a super cheap?
No, it doesn't
this is the Super Bowl. Nothing is super cheap about the Super Bowl.
In Miami, I guess probably not. Yeah.
Even if you got it through the rest of the team, like if you got, like if you were a season ticket member who got access to buy the tickets, I think they were still like $2,000.
Face value?
Yeah,
I believe it.
I think they were about $2,000 face. So, Pinellas, there's nothing cheap about the availability. That's why they have to treat it this week. I'm glad that they're kind of treating this week. Like normal week, I understand that they're going to still have other things going into the process of next week, and they're still having to, like, do video board stuff for the Super Bowl and all that things that come with it. But at least, you know, I'm thankful Andy has gone through this process before because
other guys on staff, you know, like, too. Other guys on the coaching staff. Spags has been through it before.
I think you can overthink it. I think you can overthink what comes into that. I think maybe even McVay was a good example of that last year. So they got blown out in that game. They didn't seem like their plan was off. Like, maybe they're just like, oh, this is our plan, or is that a plan, or is this it, or are we going to factor through? I don't know, Belichick's just a better coach, but I think you can kind of get sucked into that.
Yeah. Sean McVay didn't adjust at all against one of the greatest defensive-minded head coaches of all time.
I'm just going to do this. Like, bad idea.
Our NFL postseason coverage brought to you by Twin Peaks in Olathe and Independence. Eats, drinks, and scenic views. Coming up next on Cody and Gold, one stat for the 49ers defense that does not bode well, we think, for Kansas City. And Super Bowl 4 to Super Bowl 54, a look back from then and now.
Cody and Gold, brought to you by Crossroads Investment Lending, the fix and flip guys at caseylend.com.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.